Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. What to do with the approximately 78 acres just north of the city of Ukiah, commonly known as the Old Masonite property, will be on the ballot this fall at the initiative of a German-controlled shopping center developer based in Ukiah, known as Developers Diversified Realty. Referred to by its place on the ballot, it's called Measure A, and if it passes, will change the zoning on the 78 acres from industrial use to so-called mixed use. The major shopping mall proposed by the current owners of the land would have significant effects on the surrounding areas for years to come, if it is ever built. In this edition of Radio Curious, we visit with Frank McMichael, the executive director of the Mendocino County Local Agency Formation Committee, to discuss a report the commission requested he prepare about the effects of this project. This program is the first in a series about Measure A and its effects on Mendocino County. I met with Frank McMichael in the studios of Radio Curious on September 25th, 2009, and quickly got into the details of his report. Frank McMichael, welcome to Radio Curious.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
I understand you're the director of LAFCO. Maybe we could start by, what is LAFCO, explaining what the acronym means and its relationship to our community?
LAFCO stands for Local Agency Formation Commission. We have the responsibility to review cities and districts as far as their capability as to service provision.
So applying that, the LAFCO district, to Measure A and the proposed rezoning of the Old Masonite property, how do they interconnect?
Well, the location for the proposed Masonite development is within the boundaries of two districts, and that is the Ukiah Valley Sanitation District and the Ukiah Valley Fire District, and partially within a water district, Millview Water District, County Water District. The partial part is the parcels immediately adjacent to either State Street or the freeway. The majority of the 76 acres is not in the district, so annexation would be required if Millview were to provide water services to that location, as indicated in the initiative.
So in other words, we would expect the portion of the Masonite property that is not already within the Millview Water District to be annexed by the Millview Water District.
In order for them to legally provide water services to the territory of that property that is not within the district, they would have to receive annexation approval through LAFCO. That territory that is in the district does not require LAFCO oversight.
What does that mean in a practical basis?
It's a state-mandated process that requires a submission of an application with requisite amount of information, a review by myself as the executive officer, and a report and recommendation from me, a public hearing, and approval by the commission at a public hearing if they're going to approve it. They can deny it, obviously, as well.
You wrote a report about the Masonite project earlier this year. Did you cover these issues in that report?
I did. I covered the three districts in that report. I didn't spend much of that report on the city.
Can you talk about what the three districts are? As I understand them, they're water, fire, and wastewater, and what you addressed in the report with regard to the three districts.
I covered a small amount of time in the report was on the fire district. A larger amount was on the impact on the Ukiah Valley Sanitation District, and a much larger was on the water issue and the impact both on water in general and in the Ukiah Valley and in the Millview County Water District.
Can you summarize your conclusions?
Starting with the fire district, keeping in mind where the fire district main house is located, and the need to transect the city of Ukiah, and that particular location, if developed to the density as indicated in the initiative, is going to be one of the higher density locations for the fire district, and therefore one of the higher demand things. It cannot help but have an impact on a volunteer organization.
Higher density and higher demand.
Well, new construction may have a lower risk than obviously old construction, but incidents do happen, cars in the parking lot, people, emergency response of all kinds. It is probably going to be one of the more demanding locations as far as daytime population.
Demanding location means more money to pay for the response.
The necessity of response.
Where would that money come from?
Well, there's at this point in time, it can only come from the taxes that the district receives. The district has a parcel tax that it receives from each parcel for the purpose of providing fire service. In addition, it does have a square foot tax for new construction. It's not a tax, it's a fee for new construction, and so they would get some fees for that to offset the initial cost. But operational cost over time would only come out of the property tax.
Have you considered if there would be enough money to cover those operational costs coming from the property tax into the future?
I can't answer that question. I simply raise the issue as needing that question answered. And because of the initiative process, we're not examining the financial impact as far as fire service.
Can you explain that? Why the financial impact is not being examined when the zoning is changed through the initiative process? And there's an assumption there on my question that we should put out on the table before you answer, that if this zoning change were to be established through the normal planning process, would the financial impact be examined then?
Yes. Through the normal county review process, the service impacts, including financial impacts, would be examined. And the developer would be, according to that examination, would be requested to pay whatever offset was considered appropriate. Because we are not going through that normal review process, that examination will not occur. And if the initiative passes, then we're subject to whatever the developer might want to do.
When you say we're subject to whatever the developer might want to do, what does that mean? We, the taxpayers, would have to underwrite their costs on fire protection?
It is my belief that that's a possibility. That's part of the reason that I wanted a fairly detailed examination of all of the impacts and all of the offset costs that would come with the development, in that that is not going to occur prior to the initiative being voted on. Really, truly understanding the exact financial impact is difficult at this time.
Would it be fair to say then there might be a whopping bill to the taxpayers if it passes based on what those yet unknown financial impacts are?
I think the unknowns will spread into the future operational costs of the district, and what those future operational costs will be, we will only know by experience. After the fact, so to speak. The reality is even with a study, one can't necessarily pinpoint all of the circumstances, but at least a study would begin to point to all the potential issues.
Let's assume, for purposes of our conversation now, that Measure A were to pass, and 5 to 10 years out from now, the financial impacts are much greater than ever anticipated. Who would pay for them?
It would be the ratepayers to the district, that the taxes that are received by the district. There would be no additional income other than that received from that location for taxes.
Can you describe the boundaries of the district so listeners would know who might be responsible for this?
The boundaries of the Ukiah Valley Fire District wrap around the city of Ukiah. Except for the western foothills, the district surrounds the city. So all of the urban area that is not within the city of Ukiah is within this district, out to approximately Highway 20 in Burke Hill South, almost to Hoplin, is the southern line.
So what would be the procedure to raise the taxes to cover the costs?
Well, if you have to go back and ask for increased taxes, then it's a Prop 218 process. Two-thirds of the people who show up to vote for that particular election. would have to agree to pay additional taxes for fire services.
And if it doesn't get two-thirds, what happens?
You don't get the tax increase, and somehow the district's got to figure out how to continue to operate without it. Keeping in mind that the district at this point in time is primarily volunteer. It has, as I remember, approximately 10 to 12 paid people and another 20 or 30 or so volunteers. The ratepayers at this point in time are getting great value on the basis of those volunteers. All fire districts are having greater and greater difficulty both finding volunteers and keeping them because of the complexity of what it takes to be a fireman and the difficulty of being able to show up when needed.
If there's not more on the fire issue, let's move on to water and wastewater.
The proposed development is entirely within the Ukiah Valley Sanitation District. It would receive wastewater services from that district. There is a 15-inch main that follows the railroad tracks, which is on the eastern edge of the boundaries of the territory of the Masonite development. And presumably they would connect somewhere along that 15-inch main for their development should it occur.
What does that mean to the voter in terms of cost, in terms of connection to wastewater for future residential construction or any other kind of future construction?
Well, let me encapsulate it this way. Think of the wastewater collection system as having three major elements. Collection system, which is the piping, the wastewater treatment system, and then the disposal system of the treated water and the biosolids that comes out of the wastewater treatment system. On the collection side, there's about 90 miles of pipeline in the valley going to the wastewater treatment plant, which is located in the south end of the valley on Plant Road, owned by the city of Ukiah. That wastewater treatment plant was recently completed a major upgrade at a initial cost of $75 million, a 30-year long-term cost of $141 million. Part of the upgrade was for regulatory and rehab needed changes for the existing plant, and part of the upgrade was for capacity expansion.
Did that capacity expansion contemplate the proposed development in the Masonite site?
No. At the point in time that was studied, the upgrading of the plant and the capacity expansion, starting all the way back in the mid-90s forward into, I think the initial study was about 2004, that was not contemplated as a change.
So what would the proposed change in Measure A do to affect the wastewater treatment plant as it's established and forecast now?
Well, the capacity expansion is based on something called equivalent sewer service units. You can think of that as simply a average connection for a two-bath house. Out of that capacity expansion, the city got a portion of the potential connections, and the district got a portion. The district's present available connections is 848, of which if the development occurs at the level and intensity as proposed or talked about, somewhere between 400 and 500 of those connections will be needed for that development. That 848 was supposed to last for the next 20 years for the district. So if we consume, say, 500, we have 348 left for the rest of the district for the next 20 years. I think that's problematic. The likelihood is that we will not meet that 20-year window. And given the quadrupling of wastewater monthly fees, the likelihood of us affording an expansion to the plant or building a new plant is pretty low.
What does that mean for those of us who live in Mendocino County and for our children who may want to return here?
Well, if you lack available connections for wastewater, that's a critical infrastructure need for any kind of either housing development or other development. And it simply can't occur if you don't have it. We're never going to develop higher density housing, which is one of the things we talk about a lot under smart growth and other issues, without having that capacity available.
In higher density housing, it would be a more living units per building structure. And using your example before, in a two-bedroom, two-bath residence, if there are 10 within one structure, each would have its own connection and use up one of the 848 available?
Generally true. A multi-density housing per unit tends to use a little less than a house because of the irrigation issue and consumption issues of water that way. But by and large, you can equate them as being the same.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Frank McMichael, the executive director of LAFCO, and discussing the tangential effects of what could happen if Measure A passes to change the zoning on the Masonite site. It's called Measure A on the ballot this fall, from industrial use to mixed use. And Frank, once again, can you explain the acronym LAFCO?
LAFCO stands for Local Agency Formation Commission. The original interest of LAFCO was as a boundary commission. To be a little bit more clear, the legislature under the state constitution has the authority to develop local government structures. They have delegated a part of that authority to LAFCO in each county. So if you want to form a special district or a city, then you need to go through the county LAFCO. If you want to, that does not include things like school districts or college districts or those kinds of things.
But it does include water, fire, wastewater.
Correct.
So let's move on to water as opposed to wastewater.
Water is an issue in the valley. The initiative indicates that the water for that location will be provided by Millview County Water District. As indicated earlier, a portion of that project location is in the district and a greater portion is not. Millview at this point in time is under a Department of Public Health moratorium, has been that way for some 8 to 10 years, and they're under moratorium for lack of capacity, meaning they lack the water resources for their present circumstances, let alone any future expansion.
What does that mean in relationship to what you were saying before about annexation?
Well, the proposal indicates that they have a water source known as well number 6, which was well owned by Masonite. At one time, Masonite had half a dozen or so wells and about 6,000 gallons per minute of water rights. The well that is proposed to be used for this development has had some studies that indicate it could provide as much as 750 gallons a minute. Millview has indicated through their studies that the minimum they would need for that proposed development would be 410 gallons per minute. There are several other issues. One is the backup water supply for that well should it fail for any reason. They don't have it. And two is the question of whether that water is actually groundwater or underflow to the river. Where that's critical is if it's underflow to the river, it requires an appropriative water rights, which they do not have for that location. And the State Water Resources Control Board has in the past indicated that all groundwater within the Russian River Valley falls under their control and supervision and requires an appropriative water right.
So again, what does this mean to the voters? How should a voter take this information into consideration when deciding whether to vote against Measure A or in favor of Measure A?
Well, it's not clear that there's water for this development. It's not clear that if the water is available, that there's backup water. And it's not clear that Department of Public Health would necessarily lift their moratorium if that water became available. And LAFCO's position is for annexation to occur, for us to even consider an application, the Department of Public Health would have to lift the moratorium. The State Water Resources Control Board would have to indicate that unequivocally that that water is groundwater and not underflow water. And third, that there is a backup supply available.
When the report that you issued earlier this year came out, it was attacked by the attorneys for DDR, Developers Diversified Realty. Tell us about that attack and the response in defending your report that was written by Janine Nadel, the Mendocino County Council.
At the April meeting of the LAFCO, my bosses, the commission, asked me to provide a report to them as far as the potential impact of this development on both LAFCO and the service agencies. I provided a fairly small report to them, pointing out some of the issues. They asked me to develop a more involved report, in addition to work with county staff on the water issue and to make a report to the County Board of Supervisors. On May 12th, I made a verbal report to the County Board of Supervisors, primarily focusing on water. And subsequent to that report, the board requested that I put that information in a report, which I did and supplied to them on May 18th. Subsequent to that, we received a letter from attorneys from Mendocino County tomorrow indicating the following. One, I had no authorization to provide that report. I was doing it as some kind of rogue activity. Two, I did not have sufficient credentials to write such a report, and that I was outside of the direction and control and circumstances that LAFCO should have as far as commenting on that issue.
And the responses to those challenges?
Subsequent to that, my commission met with the attorneys. Janine Nadel, county attorney acting as LAFCO attorney, provided a response which in essence said, and for what I forgot to tell you, is that they made this these allegations prior to the initiative qualifying for the ballot, and they indicated that I was using public resources to oppose a ballot initiative. Well, we didn't have a ballot initiative at that point in time. Janine pointed that out to them and also indicated to them that we legally very much agreed with them and, in fact, threatened an anti-SLAPP lawsuit should they pursue it. Subsequent to that, I had an attorney representing them spend 6.5 hours in my office under the Public Records Act going through the various information and material that I had developed with water and wastewater. I had 6 plastic tubs of stuff that they went through, listed every item by title and author and so on and so forth.
In your opinion, do you think they're contemplating litigation?
I have no way of knowing. I can't imagine at this point in time what they would claim as a reason for the litigation. I'm not using public resources. We have the report on our website. While it's available to the public should they choose to look at it, we're not in any way spending funds to promote it or actively publish it.
I would just comment for anyone who is interested in reading the report. In preparation for this conversation with Frank McMichael, the executive director of LAFCO, I found the report by typing in his name, Frank McMichael, and LAFCO in Google, and it showed right up on Google search as the third item down. Well, Frank, one more issue, and that is if the zoning is changed through the voting process, the only way it can be changed again is through the voting process, according to the state initiative laws. What effect in the long run do you think would occur if the zoning were changed and the areas that we're talking about are the three that you've discussed here, water, fire, and wastewater?
Well, if presuming that development would occur after the zoning is changed, should the voters agree to that, then obviously there are going to be demand for services for those three agencies and other impacts, air quality, traffic, and those kinds of things. And we will have to, in essence, wait and see exactly how those demands for service and their associated impacts will occur. Normally in the review process, you try to foresee that and accommodate accordingly. We haven't done that, won't be doing that. And should there want to be changes later, as you just indicated, you'd have to go back to the voters to change it.
And again, the reason you haven't done it and won't be doing it is because this form of zoning change is exempt from those normal requirements.
It's exempt from CEQA and the normal county review process, from the environmental review process, and as a component of that environmental review process is looking at water impacts. The state legislature a number of years ago passed two statutes that require major development to have a deep examination of the water impacts and water availability. This proposed development, if it occurs at the level and density that is indicated, would meet those statutory requirements. That would normally be done as a component of the environmental review. That is a critical, critical review process that's going to be bypassed.
Well, Frank McMichael, I want to thank you for joining us on Radio Curious. And before we close, the two closing questions. One is there an idea or concept that you think is a controlling philosophy in life, either specific to this conversation or in the bigger view that you abide by or have recently learned?
Well, I'm of an age. I've been an adult for 50 years. And obviously, the things that I thought or view, the way I viewed the world in my early years are different today. It's clear to me that the better things in life do not come from stuff. They come from the opportunity to enjoy certain things that you can find in nature, sunrises, sunsets, to whatever, and association with people and family. I have, as I've gotten older and become less of a consumer-oriented individual and much more oriented in trying to get the better part of my day to enjoy at that level I just talked about.
And can you tell us of an interesting book that you've read?
I won't name a particular book, but I will say that I read a lot in the nutrition and health related fields. I'm very interested in issues around longevity and in having a healthy elder years. Noted your mother in the paper and the energy that she seems to have at 100 years old. Recently read about a 113-year-old man in either Montana or Wyoming, I forget which. And one of the things that was interesting to me is the fact that he said he only ate two meals a day, breakfast and a lunch meal, and never ate in the evening. And it was his considered opinion that as Americans, we way overeat, and that overeating has a negative impact on longevity and better healthful longevity.
Well, Frank McMichael, thank you for joining us again on Radio Curious.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
This interview with Frank McMichael, the executive director of the Mendocino County Local Agency Formation Commission, was recorded in the studios of Radio Curious on September 25, 2009. Rather than a specific book, Frank McMichael recommends books that deal with nutrition and health-related issues. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format. To get a copy, visit our website for further details. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org, and the phone is 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for joining us.